Welcome to the Final Ghost Podcast. I'm Anna Bogutskaya, your podcast host. Alongside our regular series exploring horror film history, occasionally I'm given time with exciting horror filmmakers working today to talk about the films that they've got coming out. And today, The First Omen is out in UK cinemas, and I had the absolute pleasure of having a good chunk of time to talk to the film's director, Arkasha Stevenson. It feels ominous that there is church bells ringing behind me. I have to admit, I was trepidatious going in, but The First Omen absolutely fucked me up. It has some of the most grotesque imagery that I've seen in a mainstream horror film recent times. Stevenson, who has directed episodes of Channel Zero, as well as Brand New Cherry Flavor and Legion, directs the hell out of The First Omen, pulling in horror references that will delight fans, pulling in references from Possession, Rosemary's Baby, and so many other horror classics that will delight film nerds like me. But the film stands on its own two feet and is its own standalone story that works just as well for fans of the original Omen as much as it will for people who've never seen any of the Omen films. I'll be covering The First Omen in depth over on the Final Girls Patreon, as well as revisiting the original films and the sequels that followed. But in the meantime, please enjoy my conversation with director Arkasha Stevenson.
Thank you so much for your time. I'm super excited. I thoroughly enjoyed the film, and there are some moments that made me squirm in my seat, which doesn't usually happen. And I'm hoping to dig in as much of your direction and your visual choices as possible. But if anything is like too spoilerific for your taste, then just make sure we can dance around it.
Sure. Thank you. I'm so glad that you got the chance to see the film too. Thanks for saying all that.
Yeah. So first of all, this is something I ask everyone on the show. What is your own personal relationship to horror?
Well, you know, I come from a journalism background. And so when I first got into film, what I was really interested in, it was kind of exploring where surrealism meets social realism. And that, I think, naturally just led me into the horror genre. And, you know, when I started getting into filmmaking, I was thinking a lot about, you know, my own past and how I was introduced to film. And mm-hmm. One of the things I was joking with my mom about is that she actually showed me a lot of like 70s, you know, seminal 70s horror films when I was way too young. And it's interesting because I remember just loving those movies so much, and they actually make me so nostalgic because I watched them as a kid. But I never really watched them through the lens of horror. I just watched them through the lens of, you know, looking into other people's lives. So That helped me understand that horror is quite a malleable and adaptable genre to talk about just people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've tapped into something that I want to bring up a little bit later, but I want to start at the beginning and kind of at the moment when you were approached or when this project landed for you, kind of where, what relationship, if any, did you have with the Omen films, and what did you see as the intriguing possibility of making a prequel to one of those seminal 70s horror texts?
Yeah, well, you know what is so interesting is that The Omen was one of those movies that my mother showed me when I was young, you know? And
love it.
The scariest thing in that film to me as a kid was, I don't know if you remember this moment, but Lee Remick is being held by Gregory Peck in bed, as we all wish we could. And she says to him, you know, I think you need to call me a doctor because I can't feel like I'm losing my mind. And that was what terrified me the most out of all of these films, was that sentiment, you know, because this idea of like losing your grasp on reality and not sharing in a collective reality really, really rocked me when I was a kid. And So when I was, I got a chance to read this script, and it came from the perspective of this nun, this young novitiate, and I was like, oh man, this is so unexpected and not what I thought. Your mind goes to initially when you think prequel to The Omen, and there were just so many opportunities to further explore that sentiment that Lee Remick states in the original.
I think that's the sensation that I was left with at the end of the first Omen as well. It's the sense of distrust in both the organization that she's a part of, that she's devoting her life to, choosing to, but also distrust in her own mind and what she's seeing. And can you tell me a little bit about how you navigated presenting both of those layers of paranoia with Nell, because it feels like there's a real psychological element to it, but also a huge physical part of her performance that needs to communicate that sense of fracturing that she's experiencing.
Yeah, totally. And it's like what was important in this film is that instability in Margaret's mind comes from this institution. This institution has bred her to not trust her instincts so that she's vulnerable to their influence. And I think that's something that is so relatable, especially to women. I think that we live with this sense of paranoia. And so I think with Nell, it became just exceptionally intuitive to her to she's already such a sensitive woman, which was so amazing. And she's very aware of her surroundings and very empathic. And so it was easy to say, like, we don't know if this is real or not. Whenever we get to these big scares and these set pieces, and she was able to, I don't know, she's such a physical actress, which I love. And I feel like she was so brave in being able to show that instability and that insecurity in this physical way. And like one of the things she does that I loved is that she made Margaret a little clumsy, like in the film, she slips in the hallway and tries to catch herself. And it's like you get the sense that this woman is already a little on edge and just needs to be nudged a little bit, to the point of insanity. I don't mean
And
to answer your question, I'm so sorry.
no, it's really interesting to hear. And I know it's always difficult to navigate these questions, thinking of listeners who may have not seen the film yet. But I'm interested as well in the setting. Do you think there's something inherently off-putting or inherently scary or unsettling about these kind of institutional ancient environments, and also particularly, I believe you shot on location in Rome, didn't you?
Yeah, really lucky and got to shoot in Rome, which is really, it was so Rome is it's like a museum, so you want a very tiny footprint and be very careful, and I think Rome was so pivotal in the horror of this film and for this character. Because I think, I had never been to Rome before. And so even when this project came up, my creative partner, Tim Smith, and I were like, well, let's go to Rome, let's explore the city. And something that really hit me is that Rome is such a sensual city. It's so beautiful. And it kind of inspires you to be more beautiful and you to be more sensual. And so, on at first blush, you're kind of prancing around the city feeling gorgeous. And then you start to notice a lot of eyes on you everywhere, and you start to look around and religious iconography is such a huge part of the architecture there. It's everywhere. So then you start to realize like all these statued men are staring at you wherever you go. And then the sun begins to set and then you start to notice more of them and it slowly becomes this very creepy place to be in, and knowing how much history you're walking on every day, knowing that there's all these ghosts around you constantly, I think that really it was the perfect petri dish, I think, for a horror film, especially for a young novitiate who maybe has never really experienced this feeling of enjoying her own beauty. And to have this pitched on her as the sun goes down, I think is really was interesting.
And I'm wondering as well, it's so interesting that you mentioned that because I'm thinking particularly of the costume and the hair design of the characters. And there is this really big, sensual, very European, you know, I'm Spanish, so like there's elements of there that I recognize. There's a huge sensuality in it that really took me by surprise. And I'm wondering kind of were those deliberate seeds that you were planting, or was that something that you deliberately wanted to communicate through the costuming, through the hair, especially? I've got a big question about the hair that I need to ask you later. With Paco Delgado and that kind of historical, watchful environment that you were just talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of when thinking about the hair design, I'm not quite sure which character to start with because there's a lot of different things. But with Margaret, the hair was very you know, was this manifestation of her mental stability. You know, it's like in the beginning,
Yes.
she keeps it very tight and very, very mannered, and as she loses her mind, her hair gets more and more wild, and we wanted it to take on a life of its own, you know, like every, you know, errant strand is a erratic thought that she's having. And so that was so fun to play with, especially because Nell had this, you know, she has this beautiful lush hair. And so, yeah, when I was little, my mom showed me a lot of these paintings of John Waterhouse, like women drowning with their hair all out. And so that really, I think, made an impact on me. And so even though it seems hyper stylized, I was always trying to, you know, design Nell's hair whenever she's laying down to look like she's drowning.
You definitely communicated that because I always make notes watching the films, and I was looking at them just before this interview, and I was like, the hair is like a halo around her head in so many different scenes.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. Yeah, because I think, you know, so much of the film is about body horror and about dismembering the body. And so starting that early with her hair, you know, she wakes up the morning after the disco, and we wanted to tuck her in and wrap her hair around her throat so it looks like her head was decapitated and just floating in this mess, you know, and starting to plant this idea that this woman's going to become undone. And then with Maria, who plays Luz, it was so the hair was such a big deal. And then the costuming, like Paco is a genius. He's an absolute genius. And he was, you know, Maria's just such a she looks like Elizabeth Taylor, you know, how it's a stunning woman. And she also has this otherworldly, other timely look, you know. So, and then with her character is somebody who has lived many lives. You can't really pin her down. You shouldn't be able to tell what her motivation is. So we wanted to present her as many different women to fully disorient Margaret. So she was constantly changing. You know, you meet her and she's kind of this vixen, and then you see her in the bedroom and Paco put her in this like beautiful, you know, Douglas Sirk nightgown. And then later she looks like Rafaela Carrera, or yeah, Rafaela Carrera. The hair and the wig, and then you see in her nun novitiate. So it's confusing.
And is there something, you know, you mentioned the idea of body horror, and I want to, there's a couple of questions that I have on that because the scenes of kind of more body focused horror that are in the film are very intense. And I'm particularly drawn to one of the first birth scene that we see, which and wanted to ask you about the use of silence and kind of why that choice in particular. Why did you want to present it in a way where we're seeing things, but we're completely taken out of what we expect them to sound like?
Yeah, that's a really thanks for noticing that. I think a lot of It was really important to us to not pull back on the body horror as it pertained to the female body. And I think that, a lot of a lot of the body horror I grew up on, which, I loved growing up on slasher films. I loved growing up on 80s horror, and but I think a lot of I felt a lot of the times like body horror was kind of sexualized in a strange way, like it always felt fetishized. And so it was really exciting to kind of look at body horror and what was being done to the female body purely through a filter of fear. And in order to do that, I think it was really important to humanize who was getting torn up or whose body we were seeing being violated. And so in order to do that, we were really emphasizing breath. So cutting out all of the backgrounds and just hearing this woman breathe was really important. And then in the end, when Nell is going through a lot of pain, not hearing anything except for her crying, just so that you're reminded of the human aspect of this.
And also of the terribly isolating experience of being under such amount of physical pain. You really are unable to process too many other things when that is happening. And I wanted to ask you about another scene, which is such a clear, one of my favorite horrors of all time is Possession. And I was really pleased to see that nod. It's that scene with Isabella Gianni has been recreated and referenced so many times over, but it was stunning. And so I wanted to ask you kind of why were you particularly interested in connecting your film with Zawalski's?
That scene, when I first saw that scene, I cried. I was so invigorated, and it was so, I felt like I was watching something that I had been feeling internally for a long time, but didn't know how to articulate. And it felt also like I was watching something that I wasn't allowed to see. Like I had those both impulses when I saw the film. And I think a lot of, this, this film being about, I think, the turmoil that this woman's mind, body, and soul goes through because her body's under attack. What better way to express it in almost this primitive possession dance that isn't supernatural, really, but it stems from this like anguish that she's experiencing in the moment, and then it evolves into being supernatural, but it starts from just her human form. And what was so exciting about Nell's performance is she wasn't afraid to explore every aspect of her body in that 2 minute shot, and we said, she we were kind of mapping it out on the date. This was like the second week of filming, maybe the first week. Like we didn't know each other that well yet. Like she didn't know the crew that well yet. It's 4 a.m. And we were like, well, how do we build on this idea and really explore the spectrum of the body? And so the idea was like start with an orgasm, end with an animalistic possession. And I think that she did that arc so beautifully. And what is so exciting to me about what she did is that people are more confronted by the orgasm in the beginning than the possession at the end, which is,
Oh, standard.
it was so crazy to watch. Like, the whole crew was just glued to watching her. And she did two takes and boom, she was, we didn't even need the second take. She was fantastic. Yeah. But you could see like the women in the crew were just kind of like moving with her as she was doing it. And the men were kind of like, what is going on?
Love that. And I wanted to know to ask you as well, it's obviously it's a standalone story and it works so well on its own. I think nobody needs to know the story of The Omen to be able to enjoy this film on its own terms. But I'm wondering what that meant for you as a filmmaker and as a storyteller to know that you had to essentially make two films, one that would work for fans of The Omen and that would tee up a classic horror film, and one that would need to work for people who had never heard of it, had never seen it, didn't know who Damien was. And what was that dual challenge like for you?
Oh, it was super simple, and I felt no pressure at all. It
Barely an inconvenience.
was yeah. No, it was so natural. No, it, you know what's interesting actually is that the, you know, if we're talking about it in the terms of two films, the film that stood alone evolved naturally, you know. And I think we started from a place of needing to weave into the Omen franchise, but you know, I think the original Omen is such a perfect film. It's so masterfully directed and shot and performed. And to draw too much on that was dangerous, you know, especially for me, who's this is a, this isn't just a movie, it's a childhood memory for me. You know, I grew up watching this film and I don't want to violate anybody's childhood memories, you know. So that's why it was just so important to make something that felt, I think, spoke to just, I mean, my own personal horrors and my own personal fears, and to have to know that they're going to dovetail at the end gave us a lot of freedom to create something different and to really explore Margaret's character and her own story and her own journey, and then slowly discover how that leads to Damien, which was it was so fun. It was I think the best possible way to kind of explore the Omen universe a little bit more.
And you mentioned something along the line along these lines at the start of our chat, and I've always felt, I'm not the only person who's always felt that horror has the unique ability to tap into the fears and anxieties of a particular moment in time and of a particular culture. What do you think are the free-floating anxieties today that you wanted to tap into with this story?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, right? There's a, I think that when we were looking at the 76 Omen and the films that were made around that time, you know, they all involve people being terrified of their children, you know? And I think that in that era, that was people speaking to the counterculture that was rising up in America and people rejecting the older generation and the older generation norms and traditions. And people being afraid of losing control because of that. And I think the way we wanted to speak to the 76 Omen is by talking about kind of what we're experiencing today, which is the reverse, personally, which is that I'm quite fearful of what my parents' generation is doing in America, you know, and as particularly as it pertains to women and body autonomy, you know, that's a lot of, I think, my own personal fears about that have has gone into this film, and so that I loved this interview with Terry Gross that Jordan Peele did, where he said, "I make socio-horror," which I loved that. And I think that's the perfect way to look at horror filmmaking as an opportunity to speak about cultural anxieties. So.
I couldn't agree more with you. And I'm wondering as well, kind of as a last question and a nice send-off perhaps for to encourage more people to go and see this film. What was for you particularly the scariest part of the film? The scariest scene. Perhaps it's not a scare, perhaps it's a moment like that moment with Lee Remick in the original Omen that terrified you. What do you think for you is The moment of the first omen that you find truly fearsome.
I honestly, it's the birthing clinic scene. Like, any women are constantly being tied down to beds in this movie, and that loss of control is so viscerally terrifying to me. And so to be physically tied down and then have what's done, what's having what's done to your body that's done to the women in this film. That's every time he films that, I wanted to vomit. I would just get very nervous, you know, and you just want to call cut before you called action. And I think, I don't know, I think that while our film, I don't know, I'm very proud of our film. I think we took a lot of really big swings, and you know, I feel like we pulled them off. And I think it's just going to be really exciting for audiences. I also hope that those scenes terrify them as much as they terrified me.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a pleasure. And just as an aside, I promised myself I wouldn't say it at the beginning, but I absolutely love Channel Zero,
Oh,
and
thank
I'm
you.
such a big fan of that show. So it's been a real pleasure to chat to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for watching Channel Zero. I love that show as well.
I know, me too. Bring it back.
No, Nick needs to do more seasons. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been genuinely a real pleasure and an honor. I can't wait to see what you do next.
Man, thanks so much for your time. This is awesome.